But I want to start by asking about the phrase giving in. The phrase giving in, it's got a bad connotation, right? If you give in to something, it's bad. Usually, right? When you give in, you essentially have to give up, and so, of course, that's horrible. We can always think of, you know, that evil, evil phrase we teach our children to avoid: peer pressure. And we, you know, giving in, don't give in to peer pressure. But isn't it sometimes, though, isn't it a good thing sometimes to give in? Sometimes it's a good thing. Depends on the context, right? Like, maybe you have a really bad habit and your friends are trying to peer pressure you into giving up that habit. That would be a good time to give in, right? Or maybe, like in the case of when I gave in once, your friends are trying to get you to eat a type of food that you've never had before, and then you love it. My friends had me go to a Chick-fil-A during breakfast hours one time, and I'd never had Chick-fil-A before. And chicken on a biscuit just sounded weird, but I gave in to their peer pressure, and my life has never been the same since then. If you've ever had a conversation about me about Chick-fil-A, you know that I enjoy it very much. So obviously there are two types of giving in. There is giving in to bad tension that breaks you, and there's giving in to good tension that breaks you still, maybe, but for the better. I mean, if you're a perfect person, yeah, of course it's bad to be broken. But if you're an imperfect person, sometimes it's good to be changed for the better. We've been going through the book of Daniel chapter by chapter for 12 weeks now. This is chapter 12 that we're going to cover today. It's the last chapter of the book. It's a chapter of conclusions, many conclusions. Actually, there are three conclusions that I want to cover today. The conclusion of the vision that happens in chapters 11 and 12, it concludes in the beginning of chapter 12. Then the conclusion of the end story that makes up chapters 10, 11, and 12. And then also just conclude the entire book and say it's the end of the book. And so let's conclude the book also. And so first let's talk about the conclusion of the end, the conclusion of this vision. Now remember that chapters 10, 11, and 12 are one story. During chapter 11, if you were here with us or if you read it before, you see the images of all these wars. It's here's a terrible war, but it's not the end. Here's a terrible war, but it's not the end. Here's a terrible war, but it's not the end. Here's a terrible war, and that one might mark the end as it gets there. It says, and here's the time of the end, and it describes this evil war, and then you get to chapter 12, it's still describing that, and I'll read the beginning of the end of that description, verses 1 through 4. In Daniel chapter 12, let me go ahead and open there so you've got time to turn your Bibles if you'd like to follow along. Daniel 12, verses 1 through 4 is what I'll read first. At that time shall arise Michael, the great prince who has charge over your people, or charge of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never been since there was a nation till that time. But at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone whose name shall be found written in the book. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the sky above, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. So just the first verse, we see the best of times and the worst of times there. It describes there's a horribleness that's never going to be matched in all of the world history at that point. But, and I'm so very thankful there's a but there, it's not just, hey, everything's going to be horribly evil and bad, but it says Daniel's people are delivered. And who are Daniel's people here in the text? The righteous, yeah. I was wondering if someone was going to say the Israelites, but it doesn't say that. It says specifically who the people are. It says everyone whose name shall be found in the book. That's what it says Daniel's people are, is everyone whose name is found in the book. And what is this book? Throughout Scripture, you can find tons of references to the book. It's actually a picture that's given many times. Sometimes it's just referred to as a list of the righteous. Sometimes it's referred to as the book of life. Sometimes it's called the Lamb's book. But there's always these recurring mentions of the book. Exodus 32 is the first time it's ever mentioned. And in that case, Moses actually says, blot my name out of your book if it means these people can be saved. Which, that's a pretty cool leadership there, saying, I blot my name out of it means people. And then God answers and says, you know, it's up to me. That's basically what God answers with. That's a story you can read. It's a good one, too. It's about what happens after Moses comes down off the mountain the first time. But God says, that's up to me, not to you. We see references to this book in multiple Psalms. We see it in Malachi. We see it in Luke. We see it in Philippians. We see it in more places. We see it often in Revelation. That's where most people have heard of the book before. Malachi 3:16, it tells us how to get in the book. It says how people's names are written in the book. Now that verse is, then those who feared the Lord spoke with one another. The Lord paid attention and heard them, and a book of remembrance was written before him of those who feared the Lord and esteemed his name. See there, it's called a book of remembrance, but whose names are added? Those who fear the Lord and esteem his name. You're placed in the book under those conditions in this verse. And we see in Daniel chapter 12, verse 2, an important truth that coincides with that. These people who are righteous, who are names are written in the book of life, they're going to be saved. And then it sort of backs up and says, now everyone is going to be raised in those last days. In Daniel chapter 12, verse 2, it says everyone gets raised and says some are raised to eternal life. It's easy to see these are the people whose names are written in the book. Some are raised to eternal contempt, it says. Now, did you know that Daniel chapter 12, verse 2 is the only reference we have to resurrection in the Old Testament? Clear reference, this is exactly what it's talking about. There's a few hints in other places, but you only read resurrection to that knowing what else the Bible teaches about resurrection. You'd only read it there. The only clear point that says people are going to be raised from the dead in the Old Testament is Daniel chapter 12, verse 2. Now, the New Testament has lots of examples. It talks about it a lot, and that's why we see the other hints in the other verses, that it hints at it in the Old Testament. But the only Old Testament example is just this one spot. And what does that teach us, that it's not talked about very much in the Old Testament? I think one thing it teaches us is that faith that follows God, real faith, is not just like I've used this phrase before, a get-out-of-hell-free card. It's not about the eternal rewards. Because Daniel is one of the last books that was written in the Old Testament. And finally, it's like, oh yeah, there's going to be this really cool reward for people who follow God. Up until that point, it's like, just follow God because he's God. That's kind of what most of the Old Testament is follow God, because that's the best idea you could ever have on this earth. Not necessarily because of the rewards, not because you want his toys or anything like that. It's similar, a relationship with God like this is similar to dating someone because you actually like them, or you're dating someone because they buy you cool stuff. It's similar to that. You don't just have a relationship with God because he saves you, and the Israelites were forced to have that. They failed a lot. But they're forced to have that because they didn't see all the different promises about resurrection. They just saw a lot of temporary and nationwide promises, not individual necessarily. If you really get the salvation and you fear the Lord thing, you're not going to be concerned about doing the things that God asks you because they're his commandments. You're going to be concerned about doing the things that God asks you because you love him and want to love him with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And Jesus even sort of taught that. And he said, that's the most important thing, is loving God, not necessarily all this other stuff, because if you get that first thing, everything else falls in line. And I think this is proof for that we see that that's not there throughout all over the Old Testament. I think Daniel knew that concept. He had that concept pretty well down, which is why it was, I think, easier for him to hold on to his faith in the tension of being taken from a place and being put in this other place that wanted everything for him except for following after God. I think because Daniel realized, you know, it's not that I have to do X, Y, and Z, because then he could have found loopholes in the system. It's, no, I need to pursue God. And so there are no loopholes to that. And that's why I think he was able to hold on to it. But continuing on in the text, we see this other note that those who are wise will shine like the sun. Those who spur others on towards good deeds and righteousness will be like stars in the heavens. And then Daniel is given this note, seal up the book. He said, seal it up. And it's not referring to the book of life here, which is the last one he mentioned. It's referring to the book of truth, which is mentioned in chapter 10. The messenger is about to tell Daniel everything and says, here's the book of truth. And then he starts talking, and he finishes this lesson and then says, now seal up this book of truth, is what he's saying. So not the book of life. It's important to know that that's not sealed up just yet. The book of truth is what's sealed up. This message of all this vision about the future and what is to come. And it doesn't mean seal up the book so that no one can read it. That's what I've thought about in the past until I looked it up. That's when someone said seal up this book or seal this document back then, a legal document would be sealed up. They would make a copy of it, seal it, put it in like a safe or another safe place, a place with guards. Then the other copy would get to float around freely. And so if you seal up a document, it means make a copy, let people read about it, but don't let it be tampered with. Make sure that we've got the original still intact. That's sort of what it's saying. So he's not saying don't let people hear about this message. It's saying don't let it get tampered with. And so in those days, if someone contested what was written, they'd unseal the sealed document, fix the copy if it was wrong, and then reseal the sealed document. That's how it would work back then. And so Daniel's being told this is an official statement from God. Don't mess with the message that's in it. But with that sealing, the vision gets ended. The vision of chapters 11 to part of 12 gets ended, but the story from chapters 10, 11, and 12 is not over yet. The introduction was chapter 10. The meat of it was chapter 11, but now we're in chapter 12, and the angels are still hanging out. They're still around. Daniel's still got some questions, and so then we read this next part, verse 5 through the end of the chapter. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, two others stood, one on this bank of the stream and one on that bank of the stream. And someone said to the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the stream, "How long shall it be till the end of these wonders?" And I heard the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the stream. He raised his right hand and his left hand toward heaven and swore by him who lives forever that it would be for a time, times, and half a time, and that when the shattering of the power of the holy people comes to an end, all these things would be finished. I heard, but I did not understand. And then I said, "O my Lord, what shall be the outcome of these things?" He said, "Go your way, Daniel, for the words are shut up and sealed until the time of the end. Many shall purify themselves and make themselves white and be refined, but the wicked shall act wickedly. And none of the wicked shall understand, but those who are wise shall understand. And from the time that the regular burnt offering is taken away and the abomination that makes desolate is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he who waits and arrives at the 1,335 days. But go your way till the end, and you shall rest and shall stand in your allotted place at the end of the days." And that is the end of the book of Daniel. We're reminded that we're still in the same story as chapter 10 because it says now we're back at the river. Chapter 10 talked about how it was at the bank of the river. Chapter 10 reminds us that we're there. Now there's angels on both sides of the river, and someone shouts out something about this vision. We don't know if it's an angel who's curious or it's Daniel, and he's just sheepish about writing that down, that he's the one who asked. But someone asks and says, "So how long is all that crazy stuff going to take?" That's what's asked here. And the super cool, scary person that makes you pass out because he's so awesome, guy from chapter 10, reread his description if you want to. It's really crazy. But he raises both hands to heaven, which is important because all the other people who swear by heaven raise only one hand. So I guess he's doing like a super, super true statement. And he says, this is going to last a time, times, and half a time, is what he says. So it's a times, which is one, times, which is two or more. So one plus two plus a half a time is three, is three and a half. Do you remember what three and a half means from previous sermons? Or just do you have a guess? Three and a half means not seven, is basically what it means. Seven is the number of completeness, right? It means as much as it takes, complete, full, perfect. And what's half of that? Not complete, full, perfect. That's what that means. And so all that worst of time stuff ever, it's not going to go on forever. It's not going to be two fulfillments into the end. It's going to be cut short. The terrible days prophesied in the first verse, thankfully, are only three and a half. They're not seven. They will end. God has marked their days. But then Daniel, he voices and says, I don't get it. I don't blame him either, though. And so Daniel says that. He says, I don't get it. What's the outcome? And the messenger responds, go your way. Basically says, get on with life, is what the messenger responds with. Now, the heavenly messenger says that, and then he adds, good people are going to be good. Wicked people are going to be wicked. The wicked won't even see God's plan. But here's a hint, Daniel. 1,290 and 1,335 days. Which that's confusing too, but that's 3.5 years, 3.5 years in an ancient lunar calendar and 3.5 years in an ancient solar calendar. So the same amount of time per se, not quite, different number of days, but 3.5 years, 3.5 years is what's given. And two different increments of days, which tells me it's not specific about the length of time, the 3.5 is what matters. Because there are different lengths of days, but he basically gives the same description each one, and one's solar, one's lunar. He's saying, 3.5, Daniel. Get that, not seven, is I think what he's saying to Daniel here. The main point, though, isn't even the numbers and the stuff. The messenger says twice, go your way. Live life, he tells Daniel. And he's told, you know, live on, you'll die one day, and things are going to be okay, and God's going to take care of you, is the end of the book. That's a very low-key ending to such a crazy story and big, giant a book with all these amazing things that happen. But Daniel's being told, and I have a hunch that we're being told through Daniel, don't get caught up in all these crazy details about all these weird things, Daniel. Don't be anxious about your life. Don't be worried and panicked about the end of the world or when all these things are going to be fulfilled. Don't lose the big picture, I think is what Daniel's being told. And so don't lose the forest for the trees. Even in confusing prophecy, even if the world seems like its end is near, even if fill in the blank, what's the big picture is don't forget the overall message of Daniel, is what Daniel's being told here. He's being, go your way, Daniel. Live your life. things are going to be okay, is what this messenger is telling him, and doesn't give him all the precise details of some of these things. And so with that, let's move on to the conclusion of the book. What was the theme of the whole book of Daniel? Because if we're supposed to remember the overall theme of the book of Daniel, it's supposed to be live your life, don't get caught up in the details, remember the forest, not necessarily all the little trees. What is the overall theme of the book of Daniel? I've given it away many times in the sermons, if you've been here. But it's one thing you might be able to guess, too. It's that God is in control. Now, that's the theme of the entire book of Daniel. Every single lesson, every single prophecy, all of them, you could say, the point of each story is God is in control. God's the boss of the world, is what we see. In spite of present appearances, no matter how crazy it gets, no matter how tense this world gets, no matter how apocalyptic the world seems like it's going, God is still in control, is the overall theme of the entire book of Daniel. Here are the times throughout the story of Daniel that we've seen when God is in control. God's in control when every single thing is taken away from you. He's in control when the world is begging conformity from you. God's still in control when social or governmental power is wielded against you. God is still in control when your own faults cause your undoing. God is in control when government writes laws that are contrary to God's laws. God is in control even when the future seems confusing or it seems scary. God's in control even when evidence of his activity here on this earth is swept under the rug by people in power. God is in control when his anointed one, the Messiah, dies. And God is in control when it seems like the end of the world is at hand. No matter how strong this world's tension gets, God's in control of world powers. He's in control of history. He's in control of our minds. He's in control of dreams. He's in control of the natural world. He's in control of truth itself. And he's in control of more. These are the things we see in the book of Daniel throughout the whole story, is that God's the good guy, and guess what? He wins in the end. God's in control. That's a really encouraging message that, yeah, it would be terrible to lose that forest for the trees of, well, what, I'm anxious, are we in fulfillment of prophecy? How long is this thing going to last? What's going on? Is this person the Antichrist? Don't lose the forest for the trees. God's in control. That's what I think Daniel's being told, and we by proxy are being told now. Because to those who have their name written in the book of life, God's on their side. That's good news here. Daniel, it was written for people who were being pulled in literally every single direction except for towards God. And sometimes our world feels that way. And so that message that, hey, don't worry, God's in control, even if you're feeling pulled in a different direction, that's the message for us too as we read the book of Daniel. Have you ever felt the tension on this earth? I mean, I have. That's normal. If you haven't felt tension, you're like in a coma. Maybe you're just blissfully ignorant if you haven't felt the tension of this earth. I don't know. But Daniel felt the tension. I mean, it's obvious, especially if you read this stuff. In the first half, the government's beating him up the whole time. In the second half, he's seeing scary visions of, like, people dying everywhere the whole time. But he's feeling the pull of the world just not being right throughout the entire book. And he didn't just survive, though, throughout it. We learn he actually thrived throughout it. He was super blessed and succeeded and pushed through all these things with God on his side. It didn't mean that it wasn't easy for him. It never says that. And it didn't mean that he went through it without pain. As we see from the beginning of chapter 10, it didn't mean he didn't go through without mourning. He was in mourning for 3 weeks at the beginning of chapter 10. So all because he's thriving in the tension with God on his side, it doesn't mean that everything's like perfect and hunky-dory. He's still human. So, I mean, it's okay if we go through times that are hard. But his way to get through the tension is still worth emulating. It's still worth saying, hey, Daniel is a guy that it would be okay if my life followed after some of the things he did. Anna, at the beginning of the sermon series, you gave me a song. You even played it at the beginning of the service. Dare to be a Daniel. The song begs us to dare to be a Daniel. And hey, I'll sing it, since we didn't sing another point in the whole sermon series of 12 weeks. It goes, dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone, dare to have a purpose firm, dare to make it known, standing by a purpose true, heeding God's command, honor them the faithful few, all hail to Daniel's band. Dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone, dare to have a purpose firm, dare to make it known. Hold the gospel banner high, on to victory grand. Satan and his host defy and shout for Daniel's band. There's a song for you there. So the version I had a bunch of kids singing, so maybe it's a kid's song. I don't know. But it's still a good song. It tells, hey, dare to be a Daniel. Be willing to be like Daniel. And the last verse of it's the important part, though. hold the gospel banner high, I think, is the important part. And be perfectly okay if you defy Satan and his host. It's okay. And Satan's going to push back, though, but God is in control. Daniel stood firm in the midst of a culture that really did not care whatsoever for God. It cared for spirituality. Like, it really cared for spirituality, but it did not care for spirituality when that spirituality interfered with life. But Daniel knew that the real way to actually live is to let the true spirituality of this world, God, interfere with your life as much as possible. Daniel understood that, and so he was able to make it through here. Daniel knew that's how to live, is to let God interfere in your life. Half a millennium later, the man that Daniel, he caught shadows of, which is pretty cool that we get to see that in his book, but he only caught shadows of Jesus, but Jesus spoke this a little over half a millennium later in Matthew 16. Said, then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay each person according to what he has done. God is in control. We see here, God is infinitely powerful. He really could make a rock so big he couldn't lift it, but at any given time he could decide, you know what, I'm going to lift it. Like God is supremely powerful. And if you want to have real, true life, then you'll be like Daniel. You let God interfere in your life. You'll realize that to truly live, you give your life up to God. You let him have control, because he's already in control. So might as well stop fighting him and let him be in control of your life. Because what good is it to live for short-term pursuits that maybe will last to the end of this lifetime, but most of them probably not? What good is it to live after those things when sometime during it all you might lose your soul? Because it says in that text, and we know it's true, it even says in Daniel's text too, that God is going to come and judge us. And like Daniel's text told us, some will be resurrected to eternal life and some will be resurrected to eternal contempt. We will be repaid for what we have done, it says. But thankfully, though, it doesn't end there. There's thankfully another side to this coin that Daniel could catch glimpses of. We don't simply get what we deserve, which is always the nice part. It's the best part of the full story of the Bible, that if we side ourselves with Christ, if we pursue him because he first pursued us, then we can be paid what he deserves instead. Because it's sort of a law of the universe. Some people call it karma. Some people call it you reap what you sow, that what you get what you give. But thankfully, Christianity is more than that. It's if you're on God's side, you get what he gave, and you reap what he sowed, and you get Jesus instead of what you deserve, and your name can be written in the book of life, because no one deserves to have their name written in the book of life, but Jesus was willing to let you take his place in the book of life. And so as we wrap up this look at a life of tension, the life of Daniel, I have a couple questions. One is that, is your life ever tense? Yeah, a couple of people are listening. That's good. Everyone's life is tense. In fact, tension is genuinely more than you can handle, and by yourself, it will break you. That's just true. Otherwise, Jesus didn't need to come. Tension by ourselves will break us. But wouldn't you rather that God, who's bigger than all of that tension, who's in control of all of that stuff, who nothing happens without him, at least allowing it, everything the world can throw, everything that Satan can muster, every random chance that this fallen world can put upon us, wouldn't it be nicer with all that stuff to have God, who's in control of everything, to be on our side? I would hope so, and I think most of us here agree with that, at least have confessed it out loud and been baptized into that. But yeah, it would be good to have Jesus and God, the one in control, on our side. And so, you still be willing to lose your life for his, because it's not just, hey, God's going to take care of me. Don't just use him like your sugar daddy. Actually pursue him in a relationship, because he's God, and that's the best decision you could ever make. Another question is your name written in the book of life. Has your faith matured beyond simply that I pursue God because I want to be saved? Has it gone to the point of I pursue God because he's God and God's awesome and following him would be the wisest choice I could ever make? And hey, it's great that I get the perk of salvation, but no, I'm following him because he's the one in control. And how do you know if you're pursuing God beyond just the get out of hell free card? That's an important question. How do we know if we're pursuing God beyond that? One way is to know whether or not you've ever drawn a line in the sand, either consciously or subconsciously, said, you know what, I'm good. Me and God got this thing. I do enough. If you ever say that phrase, either in those words or not, you're probably just pursuing God because you want his stuff, not because you truly love him. If you're satisfied in your pursuit of God, then it's probably an immature faith. Instead, realize that, no, pursuing God for real is loving him with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so there's no end. We can always find more ways to pursue God. It's never, oh yeah, me and him, God, we're tight. I don't need to go do X, Y, and Z. It's you want to pursue him because he's God, and you want to follow after him. Because there are two kinds of giving in to things. There are two kinds of tension. There's the tension from this world, its evils against those who would want to do right, and there is the tension in our hearts because we are sinful people who resist God remaking our hearts. And Daniel held strong against the first tension because he gave into the second tension. That's why we're giving in isn't always bad. Don't give in to the world's evils, but let yourself give in to God's remaking of our hearts.